Are England doing testimonials now? Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Real Football Cast. I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes we will be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we'll be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League over the past few days. But in addition to that, there are also some off-pitch activities that have caught our eye, and they'll be getting our attention also in the next hour. With the Champions League taking place later today, it's an earlier than usual recording, and that also means it's just JS running the channels in this one. But as always, there's plenty to catch up on, so I know he'll be absolutely fine. And more importantly, JS, how have you been, my friend?
Very well, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, very good, mate. Very good. A good weekend of football action. So Tottenham have done well this weekend, so no complaints there. But more of that later. So I'll best do some social media bits first, otherwise we'll be talking to the Abyss once more. First, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, @DanTracy1983. Anything show-related, send it my way. You can find me via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. And if you do use that platform, then don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you're not a fan of all things Apple, then you can find me on SoundCloud and Acast. While the easiest way to find all the links is by going to realfootballcast.com. As you should know by now, the Real Football Cast is sponsored by Loser Pool. And what is Loser Pool, I hear you ask? It's a new game that sees betting turn on its head, with the focus being on the loser. And if that has grabbed your interest, then be sure to visit loserpool.com and create an account. Especially as you can still sign up for the prize pool, which guarantees a winner £1,000. Something you will not want to miss out on. Right then, it's time to go live. And as I said at the top of the show, there's a few off-pitch stories that have made the headlines in the past 7 days. First up is the fact that Wayne Rooney is making a one-off return to England duty. So I guess it's a retirement game of sorts, JS. Is this a decent gesture for England's record goal scorer? Or does it make a mockery of the international game by turning it into, I guess, a glorified testimonial?
I think it's okay. I mean, I think the big question is it any worse than any other completely meaningless friendly?
No, I guess it's not really. I mean, I think if it was him just coming back to play one game, you'd think, well, what is the point? Especially, you know, we referenced last week, there's so few international dates to try and blood new England players. You know, we talked to Alan Wilson at length. You sort of then would think, well, hang on, why is Wayne Rooney getting a game? But with the fact there's this sort of charity element.
Were you going to say Glenn Murray or Glenn Hoddle?
I was going to say Glenn Murray, because we referenced Glenn Murray last week as well, didn't we? Because yeah. Someone suggested to me that he should play for the England C team as a sort of gesture, but I thought, now that's a bit ridiculous, because we'd be a bit miffed if you were the England C's opposition. You thought, okay, well, who's the non-league opposition we're up against this week? Oh, great, we've got Glenn Murray as a ringer. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'd be a bit miffed, but we're going off on a track already, the wrong track, I should say. But yes, Wayne Rooney, I guess, yeah, as a gesture for all his services to England. I know he's not necessarily, well, he hasn't won us anything in terms of international honours, but will history be kind to Wayne Rooney?
I think probably more realistically for club level, you know, obviously he's our, is he our record goal scorer?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is, isn't he? Yeah, he was at Charlton and Lineker,
right.
I guess, you know. Well, Charlton won the World Cup, you know what I mean? Lineker helped fire us to the semi-final. Wayne Rooney, what did we get to a quarters of a Euros or something 1 year? I mean, he was sort of the tail end of that so-called golden generation who, you know, were they? I'm not sure, to be honest. Certainly not at international level they weren't. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know what it is in this country. We kind of, like, it's always been a thing. We always do it. We kind of build people up and then knock them down. I mean, you look at Harry Kane. He's like model professional, double Golden Boot winner, all the rest of it. World Cup Golden Boot winner. And he gets hammered, doesn't he? Like, apart from, like, Spurs fans, he gets hammerings from quite a lot of people. You must see it all the time on social media.
And absolutely.
Like, you kind of think, like, Wayne Rooney is kind of held up as some kind of, like, holy saint amongst certain things, because that's kind of been the narrative of certain clubs, you know, from, like, Sky and other sections of the media. If Wayne Rooney had stayed at Everton his entire career, I don't think would hold him in quite as great esteem. He at his absolute peak, which was probably, what, 4 or 5 years, he was one of our greatest ever strikers. And then he showed later in his career he could play a sort of deeper midfield role, and actually he was bloody good at it. So I think history will be kind, but I'm hoping it will kind of place him in the correct context, which is he probably wasn't as good as someone even like Lineker, or, you know, even if you go further back into the past to someone like Jimmy Greaves or, you know, someone like that. But he's bloody good. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I think, you know, like you said, it's easier to knock people these days, isn't it? And then rather give them the credit they're deserving of.
Well, I think not necessarily just knock. I think it works both ways round. I think there's a lot of hyperbole. Like, someone's either completely shit or the worst player ever after they've had, like...
Yeah, that's it. It's too extreme.
They've had one bad game. Or they're the greatest thing ever. They're world class when they're kind of, like, very good players. But they're not world class. You know what I mean? Like, I'm of the view that there are only a handful. Wayne Rooney, at his absolute peak, was undoubtedly a world-class player. But ultimately, I think he'll be judged more on his exceptional club record than his international career, where, let's be honest, if someone like Jimmy Greaves or even Lineker or whoever else, you know, had as many games as he did, and they were, you know, half of them were against like Moldova or Georgia or the Faroe Islands or whatever, I have absolutely no doubt he wouldn't be the record all-time leading goal scorer for England.
Yeah, because you're not really sort of considering things as equal there, are you? Like, that's such a great point that people forget sometimes, that the quality of opposition, you know, like this. Just less international teams to play due to the breakup of Europe, you know, that we saw in the late 90s. Well, yeah,
that's true. Yeah, didn't even think about that. Newly created countries, things like that. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah,
but I think I think history will be kind to Rooney. I think there's probably an element of frustration that there was so much promise, but again, maybe too much hype when he burst onto the scene in 2004. And I think people thought this is the player to sort of lead us to real. Like glory.
I agree. Do you think, whilst you mention that, do you think because of, say, like, Owen was another one? I mean, he was an amazing player when he burst onto the scene, but again, only really did it for a few years. And he won the Ballon d'Or and all the rest of it. Do you think because of sort of how Michael Owen's and Wayne Rooney's career kind of panned out, do you think that's why people are a lot more sceptical now about Harry Kane, do you think? Or less willing to sort of, blow him up into the kind of status he deserved? Or do you just think it's because he doesn't play for, like, Liverpool or United, or a mixture of the two, maybe?
I think, do you know what? The first point is a very good point, actually. I think maybe fans are sort of thinking, we've been here before, we've had our fingers burnt, you know, we've had these two players on a pedestal, Owen Rooney, and thought, you know, these are the ones that are going to lead us to the real upper echelons of the international game. You know, we got to quarterfinals, and you sort of think, is that par? But then they sort of, their careers sort of dropped off. So you're sort of hoping that Harry Kane doesn't get to sort of 26, 27, and then it just nosedives. You sort of hope that he's got much more longevity in his career. But
I kind of feel like he won't. I think he seems very sensible. And also, to be fair, he's already done more on the world stage than either of those two, minus that exceptional Argentina goal for Michael Owen. You know, do you know what I mean? He's captained his country to their first World Cup in 28 years, first English Golden Boot winner since Lineker in 86. I kind of feel like he's already sort of surpassed what they've done on the international stage. So, in a way, it doesn't really matter, because you think about how fondly Lineker's remembered now, you know, as a player for England. I kind of feel like in 30 years' time, that's how people remember Kane, you know?
They should, and I think you're right, but I also feel that Gary Lineker didn't have the sort of a potential social media backlash that could have negated anything he did, what, nearly 30 years ago. I think there's still, will always be those naysayers that, just, but I think that's more the
but I think ultimately, say in 30 years' time, when they're making documentaries about England getting to the World Cup in semis in 2018, people will just go, bloody hell, what a player he was.
Yeah,
you're they won't have the influence of rival fans being in the rear. Because for all the democratisation of the media with social media and all of the rest of it, people still ultimately trust traditional media outlets more than they do Steve from Dagenham.
No, I know exactly what you
mean.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's like if I read something from like Barney Roney or Henry Winter or whoever, Andrew Downey, I'm far more likely to listen to their genuinely expert and considered opinion on something than I am the aforementioned Steve from Dagenham.
No, you're absolutely right there, mate. Let's move on. Let's go to the Real Madrid job. It looks like one that is almost scaring people off. Now, we've spoken about this a couple of times. Managers are now probably asking themselves, is it worth the hassle of all the things that will come with it? So much so, it looks like Santiago Solari will be given the role permanently. But is this something that's going to be a marriage of convenience until, you know, the summer and then the market reopens?
Oh, yeah, it's a Di Matteo at Chelsea job all over again, isn't it? You know, he could go on and win the Champions League and probably maybe be given another 4 months, or you know, or if he doesn't win La Liga or whatever else, you know, you know what that is. That's a poison chalice, which is why I'm still sure that Pochettino at this stage won't take that kind of job. I'm certain of it. I still think they probably should have got Wenger to go in and manage them just for the rest of the season, because he was talking about coming back in January, which is a really weird time when you think about it. You know what I mean? Unless he's already kind of semi-agreed or, you know, something on the sly with the club, you know, or something like that. And he knows he's going somewhere in January and has been promised a transfer kitty or I don't know. But it seems a weird one. I mean, it would be that would be a better marriage of convenience, in my opinion. He can go in, wise head, calm the dressing room down a bit, get them playing. Because let's be honest, that team doesn't, you know, Ronaldo's obviously going to add anything, even at the age of 34 now?
33,
yeah. Even at the age of 33, he's still going to add something to any team in world football. So if he's one of those very few players in world football, you know what I mean, Lionel Messi's still another one, but he's one of those, if you add him to a team, he's going to make you better. It doesn't matter what team it is. So logically, if you remove him, you're going to be worse, whoever you are. Having said that, their well of talent there is absolutely astonishing. It's extraordinary. Even without Ronaldo there, you look at their team, and they shouldn't be struggling in the way they are. You know, it's not just the Ronaldo thing. It's Zidane leaving. It's taking time to rebalance the team. They're suddenly trying to, you know, build the team around Bale. That isn't working for whatever reason. And I think after Bale being a bit more settled with Lopetegui coming in, has apparently said he's possibly going to leave in the summer anyway after all of that, you know. So it's kind of like, it's not a happy camp at the moment, but I don't know. Any team that's got, you know, Varane in defence, Modric in the midfield, you can't be struggling as much as they are, you know. You just can't.
One name I saw linked this morning with the club was Leonardo Jardim, their former Monaco manager. So,
oh, yeah.
Would that work for you? You know, not necessarily magic convenience. So it actually comes in with a... I mean, nothing's ever really long-term at Real Madrid, is it? But he's available. Could that be the man to take the job?
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad one. And like, if we're being absolutely honest, Pochettino would crush that job, wouldn't he? He would be the perfect man for it. You know, he'd sort of, you know what it's like. It took him a couple of seasons to trim our squad to exactly how he wanted it. And it's paid dividends. He's done it on an almost zero budget. Can you imagine Pochettino with the transfer kitty? He'd get some of the world's best players, and then Pep Guardiola-like, he'd make them better, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think this statement will go down too well with Tottenham fans, but eventually I think he will become Real Madrid manager. I don't know when, but Real Madrid, they always get their man in the end. Now, whether we're talking two years, 5 years, maybe even 10 years, like, he will end up there because he's almost the perfect man for the job, but it's not the perfect club for him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do. I don't think it's the right timing for him either. I think he's better off. I'm trying to be as objective about this as possible because I really don't, obviously, I don't want him to leave. But yes, he would be the perfect fit for them. But he'd never take it mid-season. Might take it next summer. Yeah, you're right, because of the, you know, he won't take the Barca job because of Espanyol. But he'd definitely take the Madrid job. I don't know. I mean, it depends, doesn't it? Like, say we get into the new stadium, and then we suddenly do find we have, you know, because the Nike deal that we've just signed, I'm not going to get onto the moral issues I have with Nike right now, but if that Nike deal that we've just signed up till 2033 is pretty much paid for, what is it? It's more than half the stadium, isn't it? So, you know, you kind of do feel with the NFL and the other revenue streams. I don't actually feel like we're going to be in that much of a hole. So it would be interesting to see now if we slightly change our model. We've already broken the wage structure thing with Kane and Ali now and Ericsson and all the rest of it. Sorry, no, not Ericsson, but with Ali and Kane and a few others, you know. If Levy decides to suddenly give him money, he doesn't really have a huge reason to leave at that stage. He's earning £8.5 million a year. He knows he's not realistically going to get fired, even if we finish like fifth or something. Whereas the Madrid job, it would be a similar salary, maybe even a bit less, actually. And he could get fired in, what slot has he been there for, 3 or 4 months?
Yeah, if you include the summer, I mean, probably two months of actual active service.
Of actual football. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Pochettino's got to be looking at that and going, why would I bother? And like you say, most managers worth their salt wouldn't. I think this is why, for example, people like Guardiola, with the obvious Barcelona thing, would never go to somewhere like Madrid, because even like big clubs like Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Man United to a certain extent, and definitely City, they're not as, you know, trigger happy, are they, with their managers? You know what I mean? They do tend to give them, they just seem a bit more balanced, whereas the Madrid thing and Chelsea and all the rest of those kind of clubs, they're just kind of like, oh, well, if it doesn't work perfectly immediately, you're gone, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a model I agree with, but it does seem to sort of work to a certain degree, but that's a different story for a different day. But there are more stories.
Oh, sorry. One last thought. I just thought the perfect guy to see them through the end of the season would be Jupp Heynckes. He's just retired from Bayern, but he's won the Champions League with Madrid in just before the, you know, full on
98, wasn't it? Yeah.
Era. Yeah, 98. Yeah, that's it. You know, he's not doing anything. I'm sure he could handle the strain of doing Madrid on the basis that he knows he'd be able to retire properly in the summer. It kind of makes sense, you know. Anyway, yeah, sorry, yeah.
That's fine, mate, not a problem. Der Spiegel, they've been busy again, as they and Football Leaks have uncovered plans for a European Super League. Now, these are often mooted. You get one sort of I don't know, roughly every 18 months or so. You always sort of, yeah. It's a story that keeps sort of coming around. Now, can you ever see something like this getting off the ground? Does the game need this and just let the big clubs go off and do what they want, you know, because they are almost too big for the domestic games respectively around their own countries? Or would this be an absolute disaster for football as we know it?
A disaster?
Yeah, absolutely.
Straight out. First thing, it would be the biggest ever slap in the face to the generally working class communities that have built those clubs up to begin with. It's a complete fuck you to all of the proper fans. But the global markets, where it's at, you know, I mean, there aren't like, I don't know, however many millions of followers they've got, but there aren't 60 million Madrid fans in Spain, you know what I mean?
No, there isn't.
You know, well, there might be, I don't know, but no, there won't be, in similar for Barcelona and Man United and Liverpool. What would happen is they would be free of things like financial fair play, although as we're getting onto that in a second, that's another story as to whether that actually works anyway, you know what I mean? Maybe that was UEFA's sweetener to Paris and City, if, you know, we'll kind of let this slide if you don't, you know, fuck off and form your own breakaway thing. I actually hope FIFA acts, and if they did it, what FIFA should do is say anyone who plays in that league is banned from international competition in a show of solidarity with UEFA. I think if they did it, that's the only way of, you know, enticing players not to go off, because you could then go off with the kind of commercial revenues they'd be paying. They wouldn't have to pay licenses to FIFA and all of the rest of it. They could pay feasibly players like £1 million a week, and if you're like a 21-year-old superstar, you know, you're gonna go and, you know, you're gonna go to glamorous stages all around Europe, you know, every other week there'd be less games. It would be a glorious life, wouldn't it? I mean, you know, would their football even be better? Would it even be that competitive, really? I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, it would siphon off all of the best emerging players, but it would also, you know, because of the no relegation thing, it would almost be like friendly matches.
Exactly, you'd have so many dead rubbers, wouldn't you? Because only one team can actually like win the Europe. I don't know what the format would be if it ever come around, but say if you're languishing in a league like that and you can't get relegated for 20 years, like, you know, if you were sort of 13th, 14th in the European Super League each season, would fans want to support your team anymore? Because let's say if you're PSG or Juventus and you're used to winning your domestic leagues at a canter every year, but then when you go up against the best of Europe and you're not actually that good in relative terms, surely you then become less of an exciting proposition to fans around the, I guess, the world, no?
Mm. No, I fully agree, mate. I don't know. I mean, the brands are established well enough, you know, with the kind of modern marketing methods, they've become further established, you know. But it would be rubbish, you know. It would be rubbish. It would just be terrible. I said this as well. I said this to I was having this discussion with someone the other day. Not that we're invited. But I said, if Spurs ever broke away and joined something like that, we both said we would stop supporting the club we've loved our whole lives. Because why would you support them doing that?
Absolutely, yeah. And also that, I mean, it's a European Super League in name, but let's be honest, Arsenal versus AC Milan, that's definitely getting played in Beijing, isn't it? So, do you know what I mean? There's no way...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I highly doubt most of the games would even be in Europe.
No, you know? Exactly.
So, actually, you just came on to a great point. You just sort of hit on one of the clubs there that aren't actually in it or whatever. But you get those, you know, that thing, and this is the thing that really, sorry about that, the thing that really stuck in the throat about the format was these clubs are allowed to, quote unquote, invite 5 guests a season, right? So can you imagine teams like, I said this on Twitter earlier, but can you imagine teams like Paris and Manchester City inviting clubs like Ajax and AC Milan?
It's an insult, really,
to,
isn't it?
To be guests in the European elite. Guests. AC Milan, 7 times European Cup or Champions League winners. Ajax, 4 times. City and Paris, what? I think one of them's got to like a quarter final.
So they got to the semi-finals, didn't they? And I think they both got to semi-finals once, but PSG was in the early 90s when they weren't this.
Yeah, but PSG did. Yeah, exactly. PSG did it when they weren't PSG.
Yeah, exactly.
In the way we know them
now. That's right.
But yeah, I think that would be an absolute slap in the face. You know, City, to put it into context, have won less European trophies than Spurs have.
That's right. It's absolutely right.
But in fact, they've won less than Villa.
Yep.
Nottingham Forest, and probably a load of others I can think of. And they would be inviting AC Milan or Ajax as guests to the European elite. Fuck right off with that.
Someone else mentioned, they said, oh, if the European Super League went ahead, it would be great for Tottenham because then they would win the Premier League. And I thought to myself, no, it'd be awful, because why would you want to win the Premier League when it's Premier League as you know it? Do you know what I mean? This sort of...
That moronic line of thought on quote-unquote football Twitter,
yes,
which I have complete disdain for, in case you couldn't tell by my time.
I got a sense of it.
That was about as subtle as a sledgehammer in the face, but I thought I'd clarify that for the more dense of thinking, anyone listening. No offence. So I completely went off on that. What was I talking about even?
It would
be,
League.
And they'd be like, oh, imagine not even being in this. Imagine winning the league without ... in. What I mean? You'd just wake up, you'd see it first thing, and you'd already have all day rage, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, something that else could cause rage here is the fact that Man City, again, Der Spiegel, doing some excellent work. Turns out they're not as self-sufficient as we first thought. At the same time, does this actually surprise you? And if it doesn't, I mean, there's not really been a great deal of like outrage or clamour to be like, things need to change, like they need to be punished. Is it just a case of shrug of shoulders and tell us something we don't already know?
Yeah, it is. And the fact that people are just accepting of it now is the most shocking part about it.
Yeah, it's
sad
thing,
almost
really,
like... people just do not give a fuck about any form of moral code anymore, you know. Any form of moral code. Der Spiegel, very quick note on them with the Mayorga-Ronaldo thing. They're renowned for having the best investigative journalism team in the world, pretty much. You know, maybe the New York Times, but... In the world, and they largely just focus it on sports things. And it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant what they do. They fact-check and verify everything. They double fact-check and verify it. They run every single word through their lawyers. You know, so every single thing, they're renowned for having that level of integrity in everything they do. So, for example, when Ronaldo's lawyers are like, oh, it's fake news, it's like, no, it isn't, because it's from Der Spiegel. So if Der Spiegel is saying City have somehow bypassed this, and they have actually, not cheated, but kind of somehow found a way around it, you know what I mean, by less than honest means, you can guarantee that is what happened. You can guarantee it.
If we stay on the topic of Manchester City, they made incredibly light work of Southampton on Sunday. So, half a dozen goals started home by Pep Guardiola's men. But the question I'll raise here is, do these kind of wins bore you slightly due to their one-sided nature? Or is it more of a case that we should be enjoying such brilliant football that is on display? And at the same time...
Yeah, enjoy it. It's great.
At the same time, do the likes of Southampton and Burnley have taken recent hammerings at the Etihad? Do they need to be doing better themselves? Because they're almost turning up with the mentality of, we know we're going to get stuff today. So let's just see what, you know, if it happens, it happens. It's
definitely. Do you think Leicester won the league by turning up to places thinking we can't win, or at least frustrate a draw out with the top teams.
Well, of course, yeah, it was the belief that kept them driving on, wasn't it? But it must, I think, yeah, you're right in the sense that enjoy football that is so good, and, you know, seeing a team at absolute best, but you do have to start almost pointing the fingers at the teams that turn up and just roll over and have their bellies tickled, really.
But it's not any worse than at any other point in history, is it? It's not really. You think about, like, Man U dicking, who was it?
Ipswich
9-0, 9-1 or whatever.
But even
that
though
was,
they were just sort of like almost one-offs per season, but now we've seen they
weren't, though, because you look through that season and they were doing other teams like 4-5-0 and stuff like that. And if you go further back and further back and further back, there were way more exaggerated scorelines than there are on average in the Premier League.
Oh, of course. Yeah, oh, yeah, you'd be in like tens, wouldn't you? But
It's because since that Barcelona tiki-taka thing, everyone's learned how to compress space and defend fairly well, on the whole. You know what I mean? Like, most teams can now defend okay-ish, so actually, we don't quite, on the whole, we don't actually get as much exciting football as we used to. You know what I mean? Like, when Spurs are at their free-flowing attacking best, it's wonderful. But we've also got that really defensive side. Sometimes you think, oh, why don't you just try a few more risky balls forward? But managers coach it into their players. Don't do that. Retain possession for as long as you can. Be patient. Build the play up, see if you can work opportunities. So, you know, it's not like Spurs, even a few years ago, I went to one around Christmas and it was 6-4 against Reading and Berbatov, I think, got 4. You know what I mean? That Wolves game at the weekend for us was a complete aberration. So actually, to answer your question, when I see these kind of things, I'm actually celebrating it. Because it's fun. It's actually almost like a throwback, and I think it's enjoyable. And yeah, you're right. Maybe they should be turning up and, you know, do what players used to do. You know, wear your heart on your sleeve, get stuck in. You know what I mean? Like, for all of the things. I won't go into West Ham too much, but because I'm Spurs, obviously we know about the rivalry, but I love watching Scott Parker play for them. Mark Noble. Because he just bleeds for that team. You know what I mean? They would be so much worse off without someone like him in their team, you know? And I want to see that more from, like you say, teams like Burnley and Southampton. And I think this is often a bit of a problem. It's okay when you've got loads of money and you're at the top end of the Premier League and you sign glamour players from Brazil or Belgium or France or Spain or wherever else in world football. It's absolutely amazing because you know they're going to be the bollocks, and if you've got a half-decent manager, they can put it all together and you end up with, you know, very good teams like whoever, like Liverpool, United, City, Chelsea, any of that top six. You know, an improving Arsenal side. But if you like Burnley or, I don't know, maybe not Huddersfield so much. They do seem to throw their heart into it. Ditto Brighton. But if you're signing the lower level of, international players, they're not going to have the skill level and they're not going to have the passion for those clubs. You know what I mean? They don't have a deep connection to those clubs.
They're almost mercenary in a sense, aren't they?
It is a little bit, yeah. I mean, they are professionals.
Yes,
they've
of course.
They've got a right to make a living. That's fair. But as fans, you know, this has happened within our lifetimes, Dan, hasn't it? It's become more and more and more, we have got foreign players. And I know that horse has bolted and that debate has been had years ago. But I do believe that's the thing. If you like, for example, a local lad playing for your local club that you've grown up supporting or in the shadow of the stadium, it means more to you. You know, you look at Harry Kane's passion every time he scores for Spurs. He fucking loves that. You know, he's, do you know what I mean? He celebrates it like a supporter. You look at Jack Grealish for Aston Villa, and I know there was that whole transfer thing, but he's signed a new contract now, and he loves that club. And if Villa come up, he will stay there for a season. And you'll see that. Jack Grealish won't let anyone around him, even if there are other English players from various bits of the country, I don't give a fuck about Villa, he'll chivvy them into caring, you know? Do you know what I mean? Like, Mark Noble is a rallier at West Ham, and which is why I'm saying they would be even worse off without him.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right, because you need that sort of player who's sort of bleeds their own colours, and without that, you'd think, well, actually, where would we be without that sort of driving force?
Yeah, it gives more of a connection to the fans.
Yeah,
what Southampton have done is they've sold all of those players to Arsenal, Liverpool, or Tottenham, or whoever else. United, you know, all of their first team, that should be their first team now, are all at the top clubs. They don't hold on to them for long enough for them to establish that culture, you know. So even young players coming through the academy there must think, right, this is my stepping stone. This is my stepping stone club. And that's desperate. Even if they're like Southampton supporters, they're still clever young men. A lot of them, aren't they? You know, you see them come out of Southampton and they generally always seem, you know, they must have a great education thing there, because they always seem to come out really well grounded, really well balanced. But they're not bleeding for the shirt, you know, they're just playing to move on somewhere else. And you kind of suspect Burnley have now started to go that way as well.
Yeah, I guess it's just a sign of the times, really, isn't it? But if we stay with the Saints quickly, I guess that defeat, you'd hope, is one in isolation, a very heavy defeat. But at the same time, Mark Hughes cannot afford to take too many more of those, can he?
No. That must have been quite embarrassing for Hughes, because actually he actually did quite a decent job when he was City manager. You know, he was the first one of the sort of mega money people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that will have hurt him personally, but I think he's quite a pragmatic bloke. Once he got out of the stadium, he'll know that, yes, they got battered against City, but a lot of teams do. And this is why I said, do you remember me saying the other week, why I was actually positive, more positive after we lost to City than I had been in the five or six games before where we'd been winning but not actually playing that well? Because we played well in that game and largely kept City at bay. And that is a good sign for us, you know.
The win for City takes them 2 points clear of Liverpool as they were held at the Emirates. Something that saw me get my loser pool pick wrong this week. So I took a punt, yeah. It's backfired. But more importantly, were the Reds hard done by Sadio Mane's first half goal being ruled out? For you, should the flag stay down or should it have gone up?
It wasn't offside, was
it? No, I didn't think it was.
No. So, although this is going to sound like probably the worst thing I've ever said, and I can't believe I'm saying it on a public pod.
Okay, go for it. Look.
Just simply because of the amount of shit that Liverpool fans gave Spurs last year, I actually kind of wanted them to lose that game.
Fair enough. That's absolutely fine. That's rivalry for you. So. Don't you don't have to put any punches in,
mate. Don't get me wrong, that will pass, because now their fury seems to have already turned, well, it already turned to Real Madrid after the Champions League final, and now it seems to have turned on Arsenal after that game. They hate their draws with North London clubs,
they do.
You know what I mean? But I don't know what it is. It's like, obviously I hate Arsenal being Spurs, but you know, I kind of respect them because they are our proper rivals. You know what I mean? Liverpool fans somehow try to manufacture one. And I kind of want them to lose every single game now.
Yeah, I guess that's just a sense of just where they are in their sort of stature in the Premier League. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. They have. It sort of died off after the Real Madrid game, and then it sort of got another cycle recently in the league game, and now it's sort of subsided.
It got it during the World Cup. It was like, you know, they were hammering for it. It's not a rivalry, not from our side anyway.
Well, it's a social media driven rivalry, isn't it? That is like the Twitter derby. It's like, It's something to steer clear of. But
although actually, do you know what? I was very surprised that when they came to Wembley, the atmosphere wasn't more hostile from our lot. And I think that's the problem with Wembley. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's never going to...
You can guarantee when we go up to Anfield for the reverse fixture, they're going to boo us from minute one. They're going to give us the treatment they gave to City in that Champions League. Was that the semis?
Yes. Yeah. No, quarters, sorry.
Oh, yeah, Roma was the semis, right. Wasn't it? Yeah, sorry. But you know what I mean. They made it hostile. They made it aggressive. They were booing. They'll do that to us. And I feel like our fans at that game missed a bit of a trick to do that to them there.
To be honest, I was at that game, and I was loath to say this, but there was so many of the football tourist element with half and half scars, and there was a lot of Liverpool fans around me, like celebrating. You have to live and let live, really, but it's not something I necessarily agree with. The stewards should be doing their job and hooking them out, really.
I agree.
There's far too many Liverpool fans around me clapping and celebrating.
Although, on a very quick anecdote on that note, I was watching a George Best thing that someone posted earlier, and he scored, it was like the record for United at the time, it was 6 goals in a game, and I don't know if that still stands or not. Yeah, it probably does, actually.
Must do, surely.
Yeah, you'd think so.
You would have thought so.
In a competitive game, anyway. And the great thing was the commentator said, even the referees applauding, you can't imagine that, but behind the goal he banged it into, I think it was against Cardiff, it was clearly a Cardiff stand, but then there was just this little patch of United fans getting up and going nuts, you know. And all the fans around them did absolutely nothing. Can you imagine that now? If they went nuts, they'd start getting punched.
Absolutely, yeah.
For sure.
Things are just a lot more tribal these days. But let's focus on Tottenham. In the past week, I know you said, and you just referenced this actually, you were optimistic after their recent defeat to City.
I was.
That optimism has been rewarded handsomely, isn't it, really?
Because I agree.
Not only the win with Wolves, but also progress in the Carabao Cup. So could that West Ham win be the real ignition spot that the club need across the winter months?
No. I think, weirdly, I still maintain that it was the City game, because whilst it would have been disappointing, when Pochettino's going through the analysis with his players in on the training complex, he'll be saying to them, you played well, and other than Lamella's shocking finish, and I would have put, you know, the form he's in, I would have put money on him.
Well, you would have, really.
Into an empty net. You know, we were good for a draw, I think, in that game, you know, and I think he'll have said, look, we can compete. We were a little bit unlucky today, although you wouldn't have said a City win was harsh, particularly, you know what I mean, but a draw wouldn't have been completely unfair either, and I think he'll have pinpointed that and said, look, you went toe-to-toe with the champions, it was a game of very fine margins, you held them off brilliantly, you played really well, and I reckon that's what's led on to this. And again, even against Wolves, apart from that, I mean, let's be honest, that game should have been 3-0, you know what I mean? For God's sake, the penalties, you know, it's like, other than two penalties, we completely dominated that game from pretty much start to, you know, apart from when they got their tails up, when they got their first one and the second one, we, you know, that should have been 3-0. I actually think, and this is probably another semi-controversial thing, I still actually think Foyth, take the penalties out of it, I actually still think he had a really good game against Wolves, you know.
Well, that's what Pochettino said, didn't he? He said it's not about the penalties so much, you know, we got 3 points and those sort of two moments in isolation, although sort of frustrating, almost just take the gloss off his performance. So
they do and they don't. I mean, you think about the first one, that was completely on Trippier. Yes, a more experienced head probably wouldn't have tripped him. But what is Trippier trying to do? Trying to nutmeg someone on, you know, just outside the 18-yard box. And do what? Just clear it. You know, I mean, I love Trippier. Absolutely love him. But that was comfortably his worst game in his Spurs shirt. Comfortably. And for the second one, it was poor positioning that meant Foyt had to cover on his own. Because Toby Alderweireld, for some reason, really doesn't seem to be able to play on the left side of the centre-back pairing. And I know they are very, you know, minute details, but you would think a solid centre-half. I know he's played almost all his career to the right of Jan Vertonghen, you know, whether it was at Ajax and then at Belgium and now at Spurs, but surely he could be doing a little bit better than he is at the moment. I think he left Foyth to kind of cover that one on his own. And again, he made a mistake. But actually, I think Foyth had a better game than, say, Alderweireld. Ben Davis actually had one of his best games in a Spurs shirt. He did a lot of very subtle things. He was filling in a lot of the positional spaces that Alderweireld was leaving, again, because it's not natural. I would have been tempted to stick with the Sanchez-Foyt pairing for that game. Do you know what I mean? Because they looked monumental together against West Ham. They looked comfortable, they looked natural together. Foyt played on the right of that, Sanchez on the left, I think. Is that right? Yeah, he did.
Yeah, you're right.
And Sanchez looked fine on the left. So even if you're going to play Sanchez and Alderweireld, given that Sanchez had a very good game against West Ham, and he seemed to be able to play there absolutely fine, why didn't he just do that?
It seems
weird.
The only reason it would have been, I think, you're looking at three games in, what, 6 days for Sanchez? Probably one game too many, because he was the only player who didn't get dropped or rested, shall I say, after playing
City. No. I mean when he came on later.
Yeah, I mean, you make a very good case, but I guess centre back's all about partnerships, really, isn't it? And I think it has been a case of just trying to make do as of late with what Vertonghen being out. It's a nice problem to have.
I agree.
He's in the mix.
Oh, it's amazing. I think Foyth, and I'm not one for hyperbole. I usually go down the cynical route when judging new players. With the West Ham game, and 99% of the stuff he did against Wolves, obviously not the penalties, which will come with maturity and experience. He won't make those mistakes. I actually genuinely think he's going to be in the top, definitely the top five centre-backs of his generation. I just think he's got everything.
Wow.
No, I really do. I rarely say it about players. In fact, the only players I've said it about in the last 5 years, I think, have been De Ligt, Donnarumma, the AC Milan keeper, and now Juan Foyth. I think he's actually... Oh, and Mbappe, obviously. But I think what I mean, apart from the ones that are already firmly established superstars, the three I've now got left. I think Foyth looks like he could be as good as De Ligt. I genuinely believe that. And what I'm kind of thinking is, if we can keep them happy, Sanchez and Foyth playing, let's be honest, back up to Super Jan and Toby, because they are still our first choice centre back pairing. They have to be, and when Jan's fit, that's going to be fine. I think we'll stop conceding as many. But for the rotation games, I'd throw Foyth and Sanchez in, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a fair shout. But let me throw this one at you then. Like, if you sort of make Foyth in your sort of top five of his generation, how does he get the game time to be that player? Because he will...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
this
is the problem, isn't it?
We need to keep them happy for another 2 or 3 years until, realistically, Alderweireld and Vertonghen will both probably be just about past their best at that point. And they'll probably be looking to move more to somewhere like Italy or wherever. Do you know what I mean? Where it's a slightly lower tempo game, but they can, you know, still be excellent. Or Spain or somewhere, you know what I mean. But if we can keep them happy, then... Oh, did you mean in, like, development terms?
Well, I guess a bit of both, really, because not necessarily development, because I think he's almost got the tools already, but the necessary minutes, because 3 years is still quite a long time, and there has been whispers that he's perhaps unhappy, he's not getting the minutes he feels he deserves. Obviously, this has been sort of eased slightly
I read that a few weeks ago, that he was unhappy, and I was like... I had no idea, because I knew he was highly rated at the club, but I've only really seen him play the odd cup game, and it's usually against, you know, far weaker opposition, Newport. Like Newport County, exactly, or whoever else. So it's quite hard to judge. I mean, he looked comfortable on the ball and comfortable defending and all the rest of it, but it's hard to judge against Newport County. When I saw him play against West Ham, I was like, my God, he's right. He looks first team ready now, you know? So perhaps, might be a bit controversial, maybe it is time to cash in on, you know, Toby.
Well, this is the question I was going to ask, because that's not going to go away, that rumour. That's only going to spark up, you know, when we get to just before sort of Christmas time, January window's going to open. You're going to start sort of seeing the links of United are going to want to drive themselves up the league, and to do that, they're going to need a centre-back. You know, you're going to put two and two together, you're going to get about 67, aren't you? But, you know, do then Tottenham think, OK, do we cash in? Do we have enough at our disposal to sort of see us through? That's the only worry I have for Wan Forth. It's not him being good enough, it's keeping him happy enough to make sure that when we pull the trigger, that he's ready to sort of play every week. I just think he's probably got too much ahead of him at the moment to really sort of be the player
Is he fourth in the pecking order?
I'd say he is, really, because then I think it's too much of a stride this quickly to say he's better than Davinson Sanchez. But, you know, it's a nice problem to have, and I'm glad.
I think Sanchez as well. I reckon he could be a top five centre-back as well.
Oh, yeah, he's got all the tools as well. I mean,
I think this is why I always, you know, when people bang on about signings and stuff all summer, you know, you get half the Spurs fans, you know, usually the Leave the Out Brigade, make signings, make a marquee signing. And you think, like, we've never done that, really. We seem to unearth little gems from places, you know what I mean? You know, like, well, like Jan Vertonghen, Christian Eriksen.
Well, the Ajax pipeline, isn't it? So
yeah, you know, exactly. Well, yeah, all of them. But Sanchez looks just amazing as well. He does. So, like I said, until Jan gets back to full fitness, I would be sorely tempted to play Foyth and Sanchez together like he did against West Ham. Yeah, I know Sanchez needed the rest, and that's absolutely right, but you know, now he's had a rest, I would be sorely tempted to play those two together. He won't, because I get it. If I was a manager, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is a big European tie, for example, we have to win it. Would I risk not playing, let's be honest, still one of our best players in Toby Alderweireld, even though he looks really uncomfortable and not brilliant in the left side of the pairing, or does he be brave, see what he saw at West Ham and looked how solid those two were together? They look like they've been playing together for years. It was incredible to watch, really.
I think in that scenario, I think it's down to bravery, really, and I think unfortunately you'd make a rod for your own back, because if you made that decision and played Foyth and Sanchez together and you won, you'd be lauded as a genius. If you don't win, you'd be like, well, why on earth didn't we play Alderweireld? So you can't
win
in those situations.
But shouldn't managers be a bit more like they were in the old days to a certain extent? You know, they're there to manage, aren't they? They make the decisions. They should have the bollocks to do it. And I'm not Pochettino. I wouldn't have the first fucking clue in how to manage a football team. Not really. Do you know what I mean? Unlike people who sort of master career mode on FIFA, or like the great football manager geniuses who think they know how to solve all the problems at a club. It's so different in real life. You know, you're dealing with actual human beings for a start. So, you know, giving press conferences on Football Manager where it improves the morale of your squad, it doesn't work like that in real life. You're going to get some twats in the dressing room, in every dressing room. You're going to get massive egos. You're going to get shallow egos, the ones that get wounded easily. Blending it all together is a total nightmare, you know? But I do kind of feel like, I do feel in this case, some things are quite obvious to see. You know what I mean? You watch the West Ham game, Foyth and Sanchez, they just looked like they slotted in absolutely perfectly. They covered for each other. You know, Foyth was on fire. He made, what, two or three goal-saving blocks, including a nigh on goal line clearance. You know, Sanchez was just statuesque. I think, do it. That would be what I'd do.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens at the weekend, and that brings us nicely onto our loser pool picks of the week. So, let's review last week. JS's 100% streak continues. So, will we be able to carry that on this week? I, like I say, got mine wrong as I boldly went for Liverpool to get the better of Arsenal. While Cole, I hope you're listening out there. I hope so anyway. He went for Palace to lose at Chelsea, and he was correct. So, JS, it's time to put your money where your mouth is once again. Who is going to fall flat this week? You can't have Cardiff or Southampton, so you've got to cast net slightly further afield.
Do you know what? It's really tough this week. There are so many open...
Yes, there are. Yeah, right.
I mean, Arsenal, Wolves, City, United, Chelsea, Everton, even Palace, Spurs, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Huddersfield, West Ham. I mean, even Cardiff, Brighton, Southampton, Watford, Leicester, Burnley. That I've just rolled off all the fixtures.
That's great.
I think I'm going to have to go with Fulham.
Yeah,
away.
I had a feeling that might be the shout, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right in that. I mean, Fulham, they lost last night. It's, I guess in terms of better, they only conceded one, but this is a one against the Huddersfield team. They can't even find
I don't get
net.
It. I don't get it. I really don't get it. They signed really well in the summer. It's just not all clicking into place for them. Whereas, you know, my other picks would be comfortably safe. Wolves have just kind of clicked, haven't they? All the new players. Yeah, they're really struggling big time.
Yeah.
I can't see what would change that. Maybe a new manager.
I hate saying that.
But
yeah, you don't like to advocate managers getting the sack, and it's also harsher when a team get promoted because it's almost a case of, well, what have you done for me lately? Like the fact you've got the team out of the League of the Championship, which is such a hard league to get out of, that in itself is an achievement that should be lauded. But unfortunately, you reset the clock to zero and you've got to do all it over again. So if you're not, you know, 17th or above, it's crisis. So I'll tell you a couple more games for Fulham. They've got to, you know, they almost need something against Liverpool, but whether they get that, I don't know. But for me, I'm going to go for Palace to lose at home to Tottenham. We've done quite well there as of late. It's been sort of tight results at Selhurst Park, but at the same time...
I always say it, I hate that old cliche, but it depends which Palace turn up.
You're right. I mean, but at the same
flaky. Time... We said this, didn't we, before the start of the season... They've got all the players there to challenge even for like the top six. They're so inconsistent. All of their players are so inconsistent. They can turn up and got a deserved draw against Arsenal, but then knowing Palace, you know, they might get a draw or even win against Spurs and then go, you know, lose at home to Fulham or someone the next week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they seem to be saving their best performances away from home this season, so I just think that might help Tottenham come Saturday. I don't know if it's because of like the Holmesdale fanatics aren't there and it's that atmosphere's flat and it's not helping.
Oh, yeah, players,
but
yeah.
Just something's not right at Selhurst Park. I know.
Why did they do that?
Because they wanted to sit in a more central position behind the goal as you watch it on telly to your left. And I think that request has been granted for next season, but obviously that's not this season. So that atmosphere's sort of been lost. So whether that's... I think it plays not an integral part, but it's certainly not healthy.
It does.
So,
although I do feel, not at Wembley obviously, but Spurs, Liverpool and Palace definitely have the best three atmospheres in the Premier League. But, you know, by quite a distance, I reckon.
Yeah, I think that's a fair shout, actually. Obviously, Palace not this season, but I think you're right.
No, and definitely not us this season.
No, absolutely not, no. Like I said last week, I'm not actually going to go to any more games at Wembley. I'm not going to Spurs until we move back into the new stadium.
No,
I'm cashing in now.
Neither am I. I've been going to... Actually, I did it last year. I just went to away games. I went to a couple at Wembley early on and hated it. I didn't bother. So I've only been going to away games live. So
good man. And also, I've got a guest pick for my brother this week. So Christian, thanks for chipping in. So this is the guest pick. He's gone for Wolves to lose away at Arsenal, which, considering they've lost, is it three in a row now, Wolves? Yeah, I think they're just wobbling slightly, and I think Arsenal are sort of they're being like good this season. So I think there's certainly logic in that, but Wolves are capable of getting a result. But I just think Arsenal, you know, especially after passing a relative test against Liverpool, you know, they would have been disappointed they didn't win, or either side would have been disappointed they didn't win. But to get a draw against Liverpool stands in good stead for the game against Wolves. So he feels that Wolves will be beaten by Arsenal. So that's just a recap. I've gone for Palace to lose at home to Tottenham. JS has gone for Fulham to lose away at Liverpool. And my brother, Christian, has gone for Wolves to lose away at Arsenal. And they are our Loserpool picks of the week. And I think that already is about the hour. Yeah, it is about
Did we even cover any games?
Not really, but sometimes it's those kind of weeks. So there's been so much sort of, like I say, off-pick action that... so I think apologies to about 16, maybe 14 Premier League teams that didn't get a shout this week, but there's good reason. And like I say, sometimes it's not necessarily about what happens in...
Maybe a quick word on Leicester beating Cardiff.
Yes,
that was very nice. Yeah. And Schmeichel's post-match interview and his tribute just shows the pure class and the love with which they held their chairman, really, and I think it's been really nice to see, you know.
Absolutely.
And actually, all the other clubs, West Ham, Spurs, observed that beautifully, you know, given that it's West Ham, Spurs, all the others did as well. So kudos to the Premier League. I liked the wreath laying in games. I thought that was a very, very classy touch. Good. I was very happy Leicester won this week. It felt right.
I think everyone was. And to be honest, mate, that's an excellent way to sum up this episode of the podcast. So I'd just like to thank you for your thoughts for the last 60 minutes or so. It's been an absolute pleasure as always.
Thank you very much, Dan. Highly appreciated.
Cheers, JS. And with that said, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast in association with Loserpool. And until next time, goodbye.